Hello and blessings, everyone. Welcome to Awakenings, or perhaps I should say welcome to Aware on Awakenings. So I see some people that were here earlier this afternoon. So I want to say hi to everybody in the chat room. And those that are joining from the Aware Talk Radio, the program before this, are also in the chat. So I see some new faces. So those of you that are new, just kind of surfing in, let me tell you a little bit about Awakenings. It's the place to converge. It's part of the converging flow. We had the harmonic convergence in the late 80s. We're all harmonized, and now we're basically all converging, coming together to share. We're ascending individually and collectively. We are becoming more and more aware, living more aware, living more awake. And a lot of this is really about connecting and sharing our path, our insight, our wisdom, just sharing ourselves, basically. And I thought befitting of this, and also in the whole light of 2012 and beyond, what's this quickening that we're in, there is a new mindset. There really is a new paradigm that has been emerging, but you can really see it more activated and accelerated now. Just like we're being activated and accelerated, our belief systems are also, our ideas, mental constructs, if you will, and also the way that we live. In saying that, I happened to be snooping around the internet and found, many of you know that Chad Lilly is the founder and creator of Aware Talk Radio, but also has a publishing company called Inner Circle Publishing. And when I read what the publishing company was on, I right away emailed them and said, Chad, I've got to have you on Awakenings. So I want to just read you a little bit of this. The Inner Circle Publishing is based on principles of mastermind and symbiosis. Inner Circle Publishing, the Revolution Press, was founded on mastermind and more from cooperation. So we benefit more from cooperation than we do from competition. I got to read that again. So symbiosis or symbiotic principles basically are about that we benefit more from cooperation than we do from competition. And that symbiotic existence, which also leads to synchronicity, which to me is spirit-led living, is obviously incorporates ego but isn't overly ego-based or ego-driven. There's a lot of tolerance there, and it's really part of the new paradigm that it's not us against them or, you know, let me, you know, I've got to make it. It's really based on when you live symbiotically and do business in a symbiotic way, you're really tapping into abundance. You're saying that there's enough, more than enough, right? And if the world and universe and God is infinite, there's more than enough for everyone. So based on that cooperation, which is very Aquarian. So it really piqued my interest because I thought, wow, okay, this is how he's based his the radio show, Aware Talk Radio, as well as the publishing company. So I really think we have a lot to learn and hear from his principles. And also I want to tap into Chad and see what he sees in this emerging paradigm that's culminating in 2012, because it is based a lot on mastermind principles and living synchronistically and symbiotically. So in saying all that, I want to give a warm welcome to Chad Lilly, author and founder of Inner Circle Publishing and Aware Talk Radio. Hi, Chad.
Hi, Nina.
Yeah, you.
Wow.
I want to pick you. Yeah, hi.
That's a great introduction. That's wow. I'm kind of shy now. I don't know what to say after that.
Oh. Well, we will coax you out. Listen, Aware Talk Radio. You're tapped in. You're dialed in. I want to know what you know, because I mean to have written that. It's really so, like I said earlier, new paradigm, so universal, new age, however you want to term it.
I like the terms. I like the terms. And I wish I could be, I wish I felt like it was new. I wish I felt like, hey, I created this, I made this up. I didn't. I stole it from nature. I match and model nature. And I don't know if it's new, because it seems like it's always been working. and nature's ever refining its processes to achieve a goal. And apparently that goal is life, because life always finds a way. That's how the dandelion grows up through the cracks in the concrete, even though we pave over it. It always finds a way. And I'm, what I've did is matched and modeled the symbiotic relationships of nature, how the flowers and the bees work together. Maybe not even because they're such great friends, but because what they're doing is mutually beneficial to the whole, and they're intelligent and aware enough to know that they're part of that. So it makes more sense to cooperate to acquire the resources required rather than compete for some imagined limited amount. And that's basically the essence. And they teach us that in business as well, that if you're thinking of a limited mindset, then of course that's where you're going to be operating from, and you're going to react in a certain way. Whereas if you're thinking from an infinite supply mentality, well, then you're just digging your channels through which the currency flows.
And I guess why I say new and part of the new paradigm is because it hasn't, it's not really, I mean, new to mainstream consciousness. I wouldn't say new to those of us perhaps more the 10%, to 8 to 10 percentile or fringe, you know. But the way that you are, you know, what you're speaking about eventually will be more mainstream. And to me, I get the restructuring or collapse or of the financial institutions are a cry for that. You know, maybe we got away from nature. Maybe that's, because you're saying you see this in nature. Maybe, you know, with some of these more limiting beliefs, in a sense, it was getting away from the truth and nature.
I think you're right. We have. In fact, I'll give you a little tidbit of information. One of them, a very wise thing from a professor, some paperwork that he published. He said that what basically man has always strived in nature to acquire his real needs. And through his own, you know, efforts, he has acquired his needs. And that not only fed him, but it fed a spiritual need in the man that basically to go out and go through the whole process. That means track the food, hunt the food, prepare the food, fix the food, eat the food. There's a whole process that's involved that makes people feel fulfilled. Now we live in a day and age, and this is what the professor was saying, now we're living in a day and age where man's needs are fulfilled by the press of a button out of the microwave or out of the store or through the drive-thru, and they're instant. They're instantly provided for you, so you can eat. There's no worry of that, but you're not fulfilling that process that's really in humans. So therefore, even though we have everything at the press of a button, more people feel unfulfilled right now than at any other time in history when they were so-called struggling to achieve, you know, mastery over their environment or industrialization or whatever. So it's a fascinating concept that, yeah, we've got away from the natural things, and by unnatural means, well, we no longer need faith to move mountains because now we have backhoes to excavate and rearrange the dirt the way we want it. Science is the new religion, see?
So do you think it makes, well, one thing I hear in this is we're not then tapping so much into our creative mind or higher mind to kind of invent or create things. You could tend to, I guess, would imagine become more robotic in a sense if everything's kind of done for you.
Absolutely robotic. And not only that, but dependent on it. Because if ever the machine's taken away and you can't press the button anymore and food doesn't come out, now what? You know, I mean, it's not like you run out and plant some crops real quick. No, we're dependent on, you know, the whole system, the whole ideology of technology, and that's how we get our rewards. You know, the scary thing, Michelle, is that the information I'm giving you, the professor that I'm quoting, was a professor, I believe, from either Washington State or Oregon. I can't remember, but you'll remember his name. It's Ted Kaczynski. He was the Unabomber.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but he had some interesting ideas about how the society has gotten so far away from what is natural that I guess repair was no longer an option. You know, it's the whole thing is built on flaw. So no matter how much you improve the flaw, guess what you got? A new and improved flaw. Yeah, But it's just one idea, and that was just his idea. But I tell you what, when I read it, I don't know about you, but to me, I think he had a point there. I don't know that you can correct it by, you know, blowing people up. That doesn't ever seem to work. But yeah. I do think he had a point.
He had some unhandled issues, you know. But there's always the truth and the lie, right?
Exactly. Exactly. But I do think there's him.
So basically kind of getting away from nature, and he was saying that we have so far removed ourselves. Sure. Now, is he talking nature like our own nature, true nature, or like nature, like, you know, birds and bees and trees? Yeah.
Both. He's not so much talking about going back to a time without air conditioning or without the internet. So all you guys out there, relax. Believe me, that's not what I would suggest either. But what we're doing, or what he was saying, was moving more towards a time when we're just, our processes are naturally fulfilling our natural processes. And the processes we're going through now at the drive-thru are completely unnatural, just like you pointed out. And even though we can provide for our needs rather easily and for rather, you know, a low amount of money exchange, we're still not fulfilling any need. And that's why millionaires feel unfulfilled. That's why people who have every freaking thing want more or something new or the neighbor's wife or the neighbor's house or whatever, because they're always feeling unfulfilled no matter how much they acquire. Because the system that they acquire things is not natural. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I
do
believe you're
right. It keeps going back to that nature. Yeah, it keeps going back. Yeah. Someone was just writing in there about that they don't think our society is beyond repair, and I don't think you're saying that anyway. But and I'm saying no, it repairs itself, you know, through us as us, and that's what the healing is bringing back into balance. You know, because healing comes from the old Latin word olhalen, and olhalen means to bring back into pieces of wholeness. So when we talk about healing, it's just about balancing, you know, which is kind of what I'm getting by what you're saying here, is that, you know, we maybe deviated too far away from that natural or nature point. You know, causes a lot of problems.
The easiest way is to just ask, is it working? I mean, if what you're doing is working, then great. But if what you're doing is not working, then you have to try something different. No matter what it is, it doesn't really matter. Just do something different. And if what we had was working, wouldn't more people be wealthy, healthy, successful, by whatever definition you have that? Would more people be fulfilled and feel like, hey, you know, hey. And if you think about it in your daily life, how many people, 1 out of 10, you know, or how many out of 10 people are living their dream? Do you wake up every morning and go, man, I'm glad to be awake. Let's do this. This is why I'm here. Or does the alarm get you out of bed and, God, I got to go do this again? Which is it? You know, how many people in your life are living at that place where they're like, yes, I'm fulfilled. I'm living my dharma. I'm, you know, doing the reason I was born. How many? I mean, 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10? I don't know. I guess it depends on who you hang around. But still, it's a matter of we all have to ask ourselves that. That's the question. If you are where you want to be, then continue doing what you do. If you want something different, change your mind.
I think part of that is, you have the book on common sense. I think part of it is common sense. If you have the common sense to know that I have to do what is right for me or what feels right for me, you know. But we've deviated, you know, on a broader level. And I think we're repairing our healing and coming back as a collective. I talked about it on the show earlier today with Douglas, that the idea of this rule book or this manual that a lot of people, you know, it's somewhere along the line in your life, it starts kind of, you know, culminating or coming together. It starts accruing these little rules, you know, and then someone tells you, well, if you don't go to college, if you don't, you're not going to get in, if you don't do that, and if you don't do this, or even the car you get, or the way you dress, the way you wear your hair, your makeup, or the guy you date, or the girl you date, or the, you know, don't, if you do this, and a lot of people start, you know, they start, this manual gets bigger and bigger, this big binder with all these rules, and the people don't bother to, like, look within and say, well, you know what? What do I want? What's, where's, right?
They taught us in business that don't listen to people who don't have the results that you want. Most people grow up listening to their friends, family, their teachers, their religion, their government, those around them, and they're indoctrinated in whatever culture that is, but by the people around them. Well, again, how many people are wealthy or successful or fulfilled in their life? You know, if you're surrounded by those people and they're giving you advice, you probably should follow it, because if you do what they do, you'll get what they got. That's matching and modeling. And however, the truth of the matter is, at least in my experience, that most people are somewhere less than happy, a lot less than happy, you know? Guess who you're getting your advice from, people? So don't listen to people who suffer from the problems that you wish to overcome, because if they knew how to solve them, they would have did it for themselves, and they can't tell you what they don't know. Your parents love you. They did the best they could with what they knew. But if they didn't know, what can they tell you?
Well, that's funny. A mentor and a teacher of mine used to say that you know, and that at some level with us, with our consciousness, we're always doing the best we can with what we know. But if you don't know something, you can only do what you can do by your consciousness, your awareness.
And you know, Michelle, I think that's why the road to hell is paved with good intentions. That right there is why the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah.
Adolf Hitler thought he was doing good. He was doing the word of God. So did, you know, the Crusades, and it's just
That's so true. And you think about it, you can morph or manipulate any belief or doctrine or principle.
Sure.
You know, it's all right. It's all filters. It's the person that's reading it or ascribing to it.
Yes.
They can morph it to...
And even the filter, because, even the filter, not only the person, but if you're filtering it through, say, religion, okay, well, then it comes out one way. If you're filtering it through, you know, some other dogma, then it comes out another way. But, it can all be manipulated to, I guess, the pragmatist is the guy or the woman that says, does this work? If yes, then continue, and if no, then change, you know, repeat.
Okay.
Maybe that's the
Melanie has written in the chat that I think we slowly learn who we are as we get older, and I'm just putting in there not necessarily, because in my practice, my coaching practice, I mean, I work with people of all ages, from teenagers on up, you know, and not necessarily if you haven't done the awareness work, some kind of reflecting and some kind of inner work. You could be 70 years old and still have the unhandled issues that somebody does in their teens or their 20s, you know. So, that's another thing in the rule book, that you, as you get older, things, you know, you get wiser. And I don't know who came up with that, because that is not necessarily true.
And I think everybody
said it. I bet some 4-year-olds that are really wise, huh, Chad?
There you go, the 4-year-olds. I think everyone's had those experiences that where they've seen people that are twice their age that know half as much. There's people that are half your age that know twice as much. And it's just a matter of, my own mother says, you know, time heals all and time tells all. I disagree. I don't believe in time. But I don't think it's the time that heals anything. It's the understanding. And you can achieve understanding in a moment, or you can do it in a lifetime. It doesn't really, it's not predicated on age, and that's why I've met people here on Blog Talk Radio from all over, of all ages, of all mindsets, and I don't think it has anything to do with age. I really don't. I think it's understanding. I've seen a new generation of younger people that have an understanding much greater than their years.
And it's interesting. I had a guest on the other day, which I really agreed with a lot, but one thing he did say was that you know, corrected me and said things were not speeding up, and that's just as you get older. But again, I'm going to go back to my practice. You know, some of the kids that I work with, they're telling me, they're 12, 13, 14 years old, and they're telling me that they don't have enough time, that there's so much to do, and they're already focused on college. I certainly wasn't at that age. You know, it's a different, because there's so much stimulus that's coming in right now, there is this acceleration.
It is.
You know, right? What to do, what to think. I mean, there's so much information right now.
And
the energy of it, vibrationally even.
Not only can we feel it, but science can actually measure it. And here's an
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's an unsavory truth because it says a lot about the design, the great design that we're in. But the truth of the matter is, according to science, what they measure is things are still moving away from each other and faster, which is strange because when things expand, after a certain point, a zero point, it starts expanding a lot slower and you would expect things to slow down. We're not seeing that things exploded and are expanding, and they're expanding even faster. So at the rate of it is now, this current design, when you go on for so long, there will come a point where there will be no object in the known universe that is even close enough for anyone to ever be visible. So,
whoa.
That's some design. I don't know that I am convinced that it's intelligent, but it's some design where at the end of this, things will be so expansive and so far apart that there'll be no sun, no light, no visible light will ever be able to reach another object because it's still continually expanding. That's a scary thing because we don't know what that means, really.
No. But it's interesting because when you think, when you're coming from a viewpoint or point of view that is either the closest beyond duality or is beyond duality, you do feel an expansion. I know I do. My mind,
oh,
right? You can feel your aura more. It's more out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's basically the premise of uncommon sense, because you'd mentioned, mm-hmm. you know, common sense is what we can see basically visibly. But I think our most uncommon sense is our intuition. And I think that mm-hmm. we're moving into a period where we're developing that to a point where this uncommon sense is going to change the way we do business. In fact, if you were an intuitive and you knew people's intent, it wouldn't really matter what they said to you.
Right.
You know, it'd be hard to do business and negotiate like that under this little competition paradigm. However, by intuitives becoming into business and creating businesses of their own, well, now you actually are changing the scope of things and business because you're introducing this uncommon sense to the equation. And that, I believe, is our intuition. I believe we all mm-hmm. have it. And the mm-hmm. more you practice it, the better you'll get. I really believe that you can practice and develop your intuition just by focusing on it. And that's what everything in uncommon sense is about. I just happen to write in the language of poetry.
Ah, and speaking of that, you said that you had a poem. Do you feel inspired to share it?
Sure. This is written for Awakenings because it was something that came out about 20 minutes before we went live, and I was just like, God, that would be an excellent
cool.
opening. I usually write my openings for Aware Talk Radio about 20 minutes before the show, so I just couldn't help it. It's an old habit.
Okay.
This is called The Question. You know, The Question. And you'd almost have to see how it's written to see the full effect, but that's okay. I think you'll still get it.
Okay.
Landmines blow holes in paradigms in which all of us fall like leaves in our season. It's easier to believe in reasons than see things as they are. It's more pleasing to see what we think manifest than entropy, like water swirling down the sink that sits in the middle of the universe, which is the one word that's embedded into everyone's vocabulary. It's the one word that's spoken in the back of everyone's mind. It's the one question which all of us need to be asking ourselves. Am I awake?
Wow.
Promo for Awakening
yeah,
Talk
love
Radio
it.
With Michelle
it
McJay.
Is. Yeah. Are you awake? Yeah. That's great. It is, yeah. I'm the one question, you know. Mm-hmm. We are that universe, you know, mm-hmm. that one verse. So one thing I want to dive into a little bit, Chad, is the how did you come to Inner Circle Publishing? You know, how did you just wake up one morning and think, I'm going to do this, or how did this emerge for you?
Well, I first was a writer. I am a writer, and I had written a book called A Day in the Mind. It's about 370 pages, which is, of course, much too big for a first book, they told me. And I submitted it to a very well-known, I'll just say their name, City Lights publisher in San Francisco. They published Ginsberg, Ferlinghetti, a lot of beat poets from the 60s and 70s, and I just thought, wow, what a great place for revolutionary content. And in fact, I was mistaken. Marine sent me a nice little half page of a ripped off sheet of paper, handwritten. Thank you for this submission. We appreciate being able to read it. However, we are unable to publish material like this. And I don't know if you've ever submitted any of your manuscripts to editors or publishers.
Yeah.
They're pretty frank, and they're not really much to beat around the bush. They'll just tell you if they don't like it, then they'll say, I don't like it. If it's not what they're looking for, they'll say, it's not what I'm looking for. But to get a handwritten note like that, I was just like, okay, you're telling me unable. Unable means unable. So at that point there, I realized, and this is in 2000, this is, in 2000, I realized that instead of trying to convince publishers and the people with the keys that this kind of material was valuable, and this kind of material meaning metaphysics, spiritual content, rather than trying to convince people that this was valuable and going to be more valuable in the coming times, I just decided it would be easier to start a publishing company that only publishes that. And that's how Inner Circle began, is by Marine sending me a nice little rejection letter saying that they were unable to publish content like this, which, thank God, Marine, because we are able to publish content like this. And, in fact, it's the only content that we're looking for. And I don't know if you've noticed, but it seems that spirituality is just getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
And
do you think that it was the spirituality that they were, I guess, nervous to publish?
It's funny because even though Inner Circle Publishing has put out, you know, our company has put out A Day in the Mind, Amazon still decides what they will list the book as, no matter what the publisher designates in the keywords for the annotation.
Okay.
They will still determine which category your book fits into. And if you go to Amazon.com and you look for Chad Lilly or A Day in the Mind, you'll see that they've put it in controversial knowledge. And I think that's...
Really?
Yeah.
Controversial knowledge.
Poetry. To me, it's just poetry, but like I said, I don't get to pick the labels, even when you own the publishing company. They'll still put it wherever they think it fits, and they say it fits in controversial knowledge. And again, it's 370 pages, and people just need to read it and decide for themselves. I was focusing on the intangible aspects of reality at the time. I was trying to come up with a new dictionary for not the things we can touch and see and label and easily categorize, but what about the intangible forces, the real things happening here that are really governing our lives? We need a way to talk about those things. And all A Day in the Mind was just an average day of you sitting in my mind and being able to listen to what I hear all the time. Unfortunately, at the time, Michelle, I'd learned some things about our friendly federal government that I was not so happy about, and so I started to write about those things as well, and I think that's why it's considered controversial knowledge.
Okay, and it was put in the and that was put in the book. Well, what can you share a little bit of it with us?
Sure. In fact,
put you on the spot, either reading or anything off the cuff of your mind, expanded mind. I love that controversial knowledge. God, who came up with that?
I didn't even know it was a category.
But it makes you want to read it more, doesn't it? Controversial knowledge.
I hope
true knowledge is always controversial.
Well, that's what they said when that guy said, wait a minute, it doesn't work like this. It's not the Earth that's the center of the universe. Burn him!
Exactly.
Everything's been controversial. You know, that Jesus guy saying, love one another, you know, put him on a cross. It's all controversial.
Exactly.
Sure, I can give you something. This actually fits with what we're talking about. This is from one of my favorite pieces from A Day in the Mind, and it's called Sarcasm, which I'm a fan of, by the way. Isn't this great? We've polluted all the lakes, destroying nature by forsaking nature by destroying things we can't replace. But hey, now outer space, this is something we just have to see. Around the world and back again is worth every billion we spend while people sleep in the streets, starving. We need to cut down more trees. I mean, who really needs to breathe? We'll manufacture oxygen with artificial respiration machines, and for a low monthly fee, everyone can rest easy, dependent solely upon technology. I am impressed by our modern methods of education as much as can be expected. I mean, almost half of our graduates can even read. We must proceed because those capitalistic Japanese are taking over our country with their devotion to understanding and a never-ending search for wisdom through continuous discipline and meditation. I mean, come on. Who really believes we're all made of energy, merely vibrating according to a divinely aligned universal course of evolution anyway? That stuff is just make-believe. And besides, I'd rather watch TV.
Love it. Controversial, yeah, a little bit.
Well, that was in 2002. You know, everything changes. You look at your writing and you look back of it and you think, you know. And you always look forward to the next thing, I guess. That's what we all do.
We do. But you know what? I really find that what you just read, though, really relevant to now, actually. I think it's a...
I think when you're talking about universal things, I don't think it really changes. I mean, what applied in nature 10,000 years ago seems to still work pretty good today. And I don't know if it needs to... It's only man's stuff that needs to be revised. You ever notice that? Whether it's a constitution or whether it's religions or whatever, the King James version of the Bible, so to speak.
I'm just saying,
you know, it all gets edited down and watered down to where it's going to have to be where people are going to need to write their own Bibles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so. I think one of my sayings that I have, too, with people that do my workshops and stuff, and they're like, what book? And I tell them, read all the books. And then write your own, you know. Yeah, because
take it all in and then forget it. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, and then I think it's somebody put. I think it's Sunny in there saying that people should be able to express what they want to, and others should be able to read it, and also about voicing your experience and your opinion. And I think, in a sense, if there is a should, I hate to use that word, but I think more people need to just express what they're thinking, what they're feeling, their take on things, it's not just for a small few. And to me, that's the old paradigm. You know, everything was centered around a small few, and then the masses, you can even see in the stock market, oh, you don't do this, or they don't do this. Only these people that do this, these people that study this, they can only do this. But that kind of thinking and the not only the mental constructs, but the systems that we have in our society that holds those mental constructs in place are being dismantled so that it's, hey, everyone, why not?
They're no longer working. Sunny's got a great point there because they're just no longer working. If you're the lion, when you get to the top of the food chain, now who do you eat?
Yeah.
Other lions. That's where we're at. We are our only predator. And so it has to change because the systems are no longer working. And back to I like what someone brought up in the chat room, just about it's not only the right of the person to speak and be heard, but it's actually the right of everyone in the audience to hear that and be able to make up and discern in their own mind, in their own heart, how relevant that information is to them. So when anyone gets censored for the right to say anything, it's not only their right to speak that's being stopped, but the right of everyone in the audience to hear. And that's why it's viable that every single one of us have a piece of the puzzle. I think we've been dumbed down and trained to believe in everything but ourselves. And that's the problem. If we believed in ourselves, then what you have to say is just as valuable as Job, and you need to write that stuff down too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's, and if you look at it, the old system or the old order was built on elitism, or that it was a small few. And even if people were aware or were waking up to their own truth and speaking that, they were literally told, oh, no, 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 you don't know that. Or you should listen to this person or that, right? I mean, I even had that in school. I remember, you know, here I'm a channeler, psychic, having all these spiritual things. And I was speaking it in my, in, you know, and the nuns are saying, oh, no, 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 you can't know that. You can't see, oh, no, 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 read this book. Read over here. This is what it is. And I'm like, God, that's not the way I see it, you know.
But you're talking about in our day and age. I mean, 1,000 years ago, it was, burn her, she's a witch, burn her.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
1,000 years ago, the crusade, they cut off your head. You were a blasphemer. I mean, nowadays you're talking about, yeah, there's still a little remnant left of, oh, well,
yeah,
we'll
you're right.
manipulate you and, you know, guide your mind to, you know, burn the rest of your ideologies, but they don't literally physically still do it to you. Well, they still
but they ostracize.
Yeah, but they ostracize,
cannot, yeah.
That's right. And that is even more deadly in today's society because, you know, you're cut off from the social and the financial aspects of life, and that's why it's so important to be what they tell you rather than what you really are. And we're moving into a time where that's no longer working. You're better off. You're better off being who you are because guess what? Nobody else is. It'll make you stand out. You want to be original? Just be who you are, because I guarantee nobody else is.
Only you can be you, and you be
right.
The best. You're the best you there is, right?
Yeah, one and only.
Don't try to be someone else. You know, it won't work. It won't work. That's what's pissing a lot of people off now. They're like, God, I was trying to do this. I did the right thing. I put this money in. I did this. I did that. And it's like,
they did what they were told.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's another one of the reasons I actually started Inner Circle is because at that time when I got the rejection from Marine, I also realized that, well, wait a minute. I also understand business. And I also see how it works. And the way it really, really works is that authors get treated like employees from a publishing company's point of view. And that is so backward, in my opinion, because it's the author, it's the you, that only you have that perspective and that lens and that point of view that can provide the content you write. And so it's the authors that actually make what it is, not the publisher. And it just amazed me that the truth of it is the publisher takes the author's work and then only gives them a small percentage, just like an employee. They pay them as an employee. Whereas
and doesn't the publisher also then own the work?
Now, yes, they own the work, even the distribution rights, which legally means if you have a book deal, then you're not even allowed to print out on your own home computer. You know, it's just like copyright laws. You're not legally allowed to reproduce the work, even though you wrote it. And they can shelf it. They can put it on the shelf for a year and a half or until they think it's relevant. Or they can cut it up. They can do whatever they want with it because, yeah, they own it. They own the rights to distribute it. And you would be in violation even to print it on your computer. But more importantly, it's just so backward that they've got the whole concept built on the – see, 50 years ago, what it took to publish a book was probably about $10,000. And that was 50 years ago. So that was the money then. Nobody had that ability. You know, they just didn't have that ability. The only way to get anything published was to go to the big publishing houses and ask mm-hmm. them, here's my stuff, take my stuff. And they say, okay, yeah, we'll take that. We'll put it out. We'll keep 88% of the net on all the sales forever. And we'll pay you 12%, congratulations, and thank you, and drive through.
Wow.
And that's the way it's went for the last 50 years, to whereas now technology's advanced to where an author actually has probably spent more on their computer than it costs to get a book into production, where they can retain all the rights, all the net. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea that I put together with Inner Circle, because, well, for one thing, no one else is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the main thing, and that I realized that I was an author who didn't want to give away my own rights to whatever I might write over the next 30 years. I want to be able to put it out the way I want to with my own content and not have to give up the right to it. I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there that see value in it the same way for their own work.
Mm-hmm. So now, which came first, Inner Circle Publishing or Aware Talk Radio?
Inner Circle Publishing. Yeah, I started that. I actually founded it in 2000, and today Sunny and I run it. I founded that in 2000, and over the past, I guess, 8 years, we've put out over 60 titles. But we just started on Aware Talk Radio about a year and a half ago. It was August of last year that we started. And, of course, all the authors in Inner Circle Publishing, a lot of them are hosts on Aware Talk Radio, which, as you know, radio is an excellent way to spread the word to millions mm-hmm. of people around the world without having to actually drive there. So I don't know if you've mm-hmm. noticed, but gas is expensive.
Yeah, exactly. And you can be in the privacy, the luxury, the relaxation of your own home and still
absolutely.
Reaching people and connecting.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about the mastermind. The Inner Circle Publishing
Beautiful.
Is based on the principles of mastermind and symbiosis. Ooh, it's delicious. Can share that a bit for the listeners, because really good stuff to bring into your life, I think, if you really want to expand and live abundantly.
You know, it is, and here's the funny thing. It's the exact opposite of what they taught us in school. Everybody remembers in school, you're sitting there, you're at your own desk. What was the rule? You can't copy off your neighbor. Don't copy off your neighbor. Do your own work. Don't copy off your neighbor.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what they told us, but in reality, the exact opposite is what works. Cooperation is what works. And mastermind principle is me and you coming together. You're Michelle Mache. I'm Chad Lilly. You know what you know. I know what I know. And that's all we know. But together, we know more than either one of us do alone. And that's what the mastermind principle is when you come to the table, you bring all of your ideas, your experiences, your intuition, everything that is you, your insight, you bring to the table. And since everything begins in the form of an idea, the better your mastermind group, and better just means having people in your group that are in alignment with your goal. That's all that means. But by doing that, you'll come up with a lot better ideas than you ever will sitting there alone. And I just think it's hilarious that they've taught us everything it takes to fail, and everything that works has been hidden. Only the 3% who use this stuff and have benefited from it, they're the only ones that know it. And I don't know if it happens to you guys, but most of those people never come on knocking on my door and say, hey, I'm a millionaire. Here's how I did it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. Or they leave things out.
Well, they'll tell their children, and they'll pass it on. But it's everybody else goes through the public education system where you learn start at the bottom, work your way up, which doesn't work, by the way, and don't copy off your neighbor, don't cooperate, don't, cooperate, because that's what success in any venture is, just a result of cooperation of many people. No one does anything alone at all. McDonald's makes lots of money every day, but if no one went there today, how much money would they make?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how everything works, and that's why symbiotic just means mutually beneficial. You know, everyone knows what a parasitic relationship is. That's like politics. That's something feeding on a mass of other people. That's what that is. A symbiotic relationship is when two organisms are actually cooperating because they both receive more benefit by working together than cooperating, or I'm sorry, by competing. And mm-hmm. that's the one thing they left out of it. They told us all to go be independent and go do it ourselves. And that's not what what successful people do. It just doesn't work. I'm not saying it won't work for you. I'm just saying you'd be the first person that it ever worked for.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, it also breeds the idea of lack and limitation.
It does.
Right?
Absolutely.
When people are the fear, to want to cooperate or to share ideas
mm-hmm.
or come together. But you're right. You are taught, and you're taught in school, don't say anything. Don't tell it, mm-hmm. don't do that, So, like, you're afraid to reach out or do – it's like, well, I got this idea, and
Are you familiar with the term divide and conquer?
Yeah,
and you do that in their mind, and that way you don't have to do it in the body. You start with mm-hmm. the kids. You already own the next generation, and sadly enough, that's what's happened to us. That is what's happened. We've been divided and conquered to the point where we're all an island of ourselves anymore, and that's mm-hmm. not how you produce things. If you had community food groups and people working together to plant crops and make, provide for their needs away from the system, worst case mm-hmm. scenario, guess what? You're still fine. And yet no one figures that out because they just keep going to Walmart and buying groceries. No one figures that out. Why? Because it's not in our thinking to work together, to cooperate. All most people can think when they meet you is, how can you benefit me? There's nothing wrong with thinking that. That's ingrained in us all. But change your thinking to where, how can I benefit you and in turn it benefit me? How can it be symbiotic, exactly, and mutually beneficial? And if every person you meet, you engage in a symbiotic relationship with long term, not just one mm-hmm. today, but long term, then you will be successful, and I don't care what your business is. I don't care what mm-hmm. you do, what you want to sell. It doesn't matter. You will be successful just by using that one simple and easy principle that they've conveniently omitted from the textbooks that we all read in the 14,000 hours of programming that's called high school.
Mm. Now, do you think that it's done on purpose? Kathy was saying programming in the chat room. You think it is done on purpose? Okay,
absolutely.
Why? Tell me why. I mean, we're unprogramming, I know, but I do remember that divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
I remember even when I got my CDs on iTunes and they went digital, I can't tell you how many people said, oh, my God, Michelle, people are going to download them. They can give them to other people. You're not going to get the money for all of them. I'm like, oh, my God, I hope I have a couple more, CDs in my head. Five, but that was the momentum, because it was, a few years ago, and now those people are like, oh my God, it's great, but
guess what? Okay, look at it, twist that, same exact scenario of those people downloading for free a Michelle Mache CD and giving it to someone else because they're inspired. It's the best word of
mouth. That's what excites me.
Advertising, right, that you can't even buy that kind of advertising, and yes, it is true that they're downloading it for free and giving it to someone else for free, and you're not receiving any direct compensation for that. However, if it generates another lifelong mutually beneficial relationship for you, what have you gained?
Yeah.
And
well, and also, when I do, seminars or workshops, and people, I bought my CD, and I want to get one for my friend, I'm like, just burn one. Oh, no, that's I don't believe in that. I'm like, you know what, just burn it. I don't care. Burn one for your friend. Please. I mean, I think that mentality, though, came out of the greed of the music industry, and then as they started making less money, maybe instead of 60 million, 30 million.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they're worrying about their little, oh, my God, digital, I'm not going to get those percentages. And I see this whole idea of the symbiosis is that if we're all operating off of abundance, it's going to come back anyway, whatever the form, that of whatever you're putting out there or sharing, even in just having a more fulfilled life is going to come, or like you said, Chad, inspiring somebody is going to come back instead of that, what you just said, that divide and conquer mentality, you know, that we're these islands.
That's the ideal. That's what we want. That's what people want. Because everyone wants to be, you know, more happier, more fulfilled, more whatever. But I do believe it's been designed and organized this way so that the 3% who own can teach the next generation of employees how to behave, because you can't have kings without slaves. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, and we're moving into a time where all of us are becoming our own kings, which we should. And when we do that, now all of a sudden we can rearrange the chessboard to where it's not about putting the other of the opponent in checkmate as much as it is arranging the board to make it how you want it. And we can cooperate and do that instantly. And that's the main fear of why there's so much energy put into the divide and conquer, to make people separated. You got to keep them separated. And the reason you have to do that is because the last thing they want is for us all to come together. This is not going to work. You realize when the Europeans got off the boat, there was only about 500 of them, the first boatload of people that came here. It was 92 million Native Americans. 92 million. 500.
Wow, that many? Wow.
Yeah, so what happened? What happened in the course of, like, the next 20 years? How did 500 people eradicate and, well, systematically slaughter 92 million other ones? And by the way, this is not a black mark in history. This is a day of celebration. Columbus discovered America. But anyway, my point is that how did they do it? Divide and conquer. You divide the tribes among themselves because they were already at war. And we're already at war. They've got us warring against ourselves. Why is this ingrained in us naturally when it just makes more sense for us to cooperate? That's what makes sense. And yet our first inclination is what? To be individuals, to not share, to not give the knowledge away.
So what we were programmed to that, to go against our nature, because human nature, you see it with children, is cooperation.
Yes, exactly.
So I wonder how were they able to do, and animals too, yeah. How were they able to do that, I wonder?
Well, simply enough, it's like a soap bubble. The natural shape of it is round, and if it's under water, it will float. It will rise to the surface. That's its natural. That's the order. But in order to keep the bubble down, you have to hold it down, or even better, get it to hold itself down.
Get it
to hold its own head under the water and pretend to drown. And then guess what? Now you got a whole nation full of people completely dependent on either the system or something else based in competition rather than cooperation. Michelle, it's almost hard. I have to walk a thin line a lot of times when I'm saying this stuff, because in some ways I sit there and think, I don't want them to figure it out. I don't want them to incorporate this, because there are publishers, a lot larger than us, and it blows me away that they haven't figured it out. They do not put any symbiotic relationship into their company whatsoever. So if you're published by the same company as Stephen King, well, first of all, he gets all the advertising budget, which he doesn't need, but he's still going to get, and you have to compete for the same audience with Stephen King. But yet they cannot figure out that if every book that Stephen King ever sold promoted every other book they ever published, then everyone would sell more books. And that's the scary line that I don't know if I want them to figure out or not.
But why don't they do that then? They do give more for one.
Because of greed and fear.
Instead of helping everybody.
Because of greed and fear. They're competing with each other. I want to sell more books than you. No, I want to sell more books than you. So they're fighting, and guess what? For the same audience. Because whoever reads Stephen King is going to read whoever else, of the same genre.
Yeah.
But it's the same way. Apply it to any other direction, any other business, any other part of your life. If as long as everyone you come in contact with, if you quit competing with them and you start cooperating, how can I benefit you? How can you? Mm-hmm. And seek first to understand, then be understood. Because another universal truth is that people don't care about you. They care about themselves. Talk to them about what they care about.
Yeah, it really is in that moving into that right relationship metaphysically, and then you have the right livelihood. It's very hard to have the right livelihood and fulfilled living if you don't have the right relationship to yourself and to others. You know, it condenses your energy, you know, no matter how much fulfillment you have in your life. I've seen it with some of the people that I work with in my practice. I mean, they're on the red carpet, they're traveling the world, you know, private jets, everything, but their energy is so contracted because what you're saying, this pendulum between the fear and the greed, and they, I won't have it, or, you know, yeah, does someone else have more, and not knowing either, themselves.
Yeah, either they're competing to get it or they're competing to keep it, ain't they?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's almost scarier to lose it after you've had it than it is to just sit there and, you know, want it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, you know, it's just dreams before, but then once you get a little bit of it, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm scared of losing this. I don't want to lose it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the taste, you know.
Exactly.
But then if we know the truth of who we are, that we're spiritual beings or divine spiritual beings, however you want to term it, and everything else is transitory, you know, you can enjoy all of it. You know, my mom used to say this, here's some great wisdom for my mom. Be able to enjoy it on a champagne budget or a beer budget.
Nine. Now that is
right. I mean, be on the private plane or be in the little puddle jumper, you know, be in the yacht or be in the canoe, you know, because it's not a reflection of who we are.
Right.
And that's another way I feel that small group, the cobble, if you will, trilateralists, have controlled is because was made to seem that what you had or didn't have reflected you.
Exactly. And the truth of it is we're not our things, but we are our thoughts. They can't control what we have, and so much as they can control what we think. And guess what? That's why so much money is put into advertising, because it's effective and it works. And if you can, it's called line of sight. It's how a man can control a horse. A man might weigh 150-180 pounds, but the horse weighs 1,200. And yet by gently directing his line of sight, you can control that animal and get him to go where you want him to go. A whole herds of them, as a matter of fact. And men and women are the same way. And if you start with them early and mold their thinking, it's called an alternative close. If I say, Michelle, let's go out to eat. You want to go to Burger King or you want to go to Pizza Hut? Which sounds better to you?
But Michelle is a rebel, so she says neither.
Okay. Well, that's great.
But most people wouldn't. So, Chad, how do we not be programmed then? You know, and I mean, parents that are listening to this or kids that are listening to this, what would you say to people? I mean, we need to have our psychic tuners on, right? Or a little something, there needs to be a little beep, 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 a little awareness. How do you not get caught in that when so much of that is coming at you?
I think we all have that little device in us, and it's called the voice of conscience. Mm. Listen to that. Get in touch with that, in tune with that, and it'll direct you in all things. In anything, as a matter of fact. So I think we do have that. I just think it's been beat out of us. We spend too much time listening to others, preachers, whoever, just something outside of ourselves. Rather, people who call in for validation, you know, they say, well, I see this, I think this, but they still need you to validate it. You've got to start validating it for yourself. And when you start hearing inside, I think you won't even need that validation anymore. I think spirit will validate it for you, and that's the first step. Actually, I guess before that is just recognizing that there is programming in place. Once you recognize that, now you can discern it when you come in contact with it, and you can choose whether or not to be affected. Always ask yourself, what I'm hearing, does this benefit me? Does it work?
Yeah.
You know, if no, then forget it, you know, and go on to something that does. Only listen to people who have your results. But I think that's the first couple steps, is just realizing that there's programming in place and then doing what you can do to get away from it by listening to yourself more than you listen to me or Michelle or Dr. Stephen Harefield or Jesus or anybody else. listen to yourself, because you know what we know, what Jesus knew, what Gandhi knew, what they all wrote down in books. You know that too. If it's the truth of it, Michelle, that we are really everything and we're all connected, well, then at mm-hmm. some level, we're all the same person, and you're just the reflection into the mirror in which I'm staring. You're just showing me yourself, which I learn things about me. And that's what we're doing here. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
If you realize that, all of a sudden the conditioning doesn't even apply. And they hate that.
Yeah,
that's why it's called controversial knowledge.
Exactly. God, I'm not going to forget that title or genre
category.
There.
Yeah,
category.
That's
I was trying to think, my God, what category is in your book? The controversial knowledge.
Yeah, and I call it poetry, but, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
But they're looking through their own filters, you know. Now, little Lola's saying something about how many people are conscious of their programming but don't have the confidence to go against the norm. It's a good point. I agree. I think that it's that self-trust in your intuition or your inner knowing or your inner guidance, and to me it's having that spiritual connection or awareness, then it's easier. Not always easy, but easier. Because to me, confidence is just having perhaps trust or self-trust in that voice or your higher self or whatever, that part of it's guiding. Any thought to that, Chad?
What you just said, I like that. Let me see the best way to phrase it. Comes to me as, and I'm drawing a mental blank, I made the mistake of walking out of the room, asking some of you questions, and I'm lost.
Well, I think this program
What was her question? What was her initial question, though? Because I
Well, how many people how many people can trust,
I got it.
To go against the grain, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Trusting and going with your intuition, those are all great steps to coming into your own. But there will come a time in everyone's life where it benefits you more to be who you are rather than what you're told. Most people experience this as a midlife crisis or whatever, but at a point of time where they have to reevaluate everything. And there will come a time when you'll just naturally start noticing that it makes more sense to cooperate than it does to compete. And that's the best way to start moving into it. Even if you're scared now, you feel like you're in an environment that it's not conducive for you to be who you are because of, you know, what you've been told. I think you'll find that with more and more people becoming awake and aware, the environment's going to change. And it'll just up in one day decide to change itself because people say, you know what, this is no longer working for me and I'm going to do something different.
Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me of, because of my, you know, spiritual connection growing up and then from a small child, I had this wonderful contentment. I really could just go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took all these courses, and, you know, and people were telling me, you're too content, you need more drive, you need, you know, you're too relaxed or kind of type B, you need to, so I start learning, right, let me try, you know, to kind of push and.
Yeah.
Then I start taking all these more spiritually based courses and meditation and working with these teachers, and they're like going for contentment. They're, you know, when you need to get to a space or a place where you're content with yourself. And I went, contentment? I had that already.
I was already there.
I got rid of I deprogrammed contentment, and now you're telling me that I need to go, I need to relearn that. It was like, oh my God. You know,
it sounds like comfort zone.
It sounds like
comfort zone. And sometimes we're only content when we're being stretched out of it, and other people are only happy when they're inside theirs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a matter of choice, I guess. To me,
I'm
comfortable in the expansion.
Yeah, I love. I think it's the ability or the gift, or maybe it's, you know, sometimes with some people it's learned, to be able to ride the wave or go with the flow and know when, you know, more of the Taoist principle of knowing, you know, when to swim and when to kind of just, you know, float, you know, let it carry you. But then also, when do you put your own you know, and when we're saying you, I mean the little you, the ego you, when do you put your own momentum in or your own focus, but when do you just know to float, go where the openings are, you know, and if things close, it closes and you go in the next direction. Very dense, but well, it goes to show how you can get programmed out of something and then programmed back into something,
mm-hmm.
depending on what you're studying or what you're focused on, or depending on who's around you, who, you know, you know, who's giving you the advice, I suppose, you know, in a way.
Think back to the going with the flow. I like that idea, and I get the Buddhist idea of, you know, going path of least resistance, non-effort. I like the idea anyway. But here's the thing. If the majority, and that's what the flow is, the flow of consciousness mm-hmm. in any country is just the majority's thoughts. So our country, supposedly, is based on majority rules, democracy, mm-hmm. or mob rules. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, do you really want to be in the flow of the average? Do you want to end up where the flow is going? Because guess what? The flow is made of average people just going along with it, not doing anything, not putting down their own roots, not, you know, Harriet Tubman didn't just go with the flow. She did something different. Martin Luther King didn't just go with the flow. He did something different. These are the people that get etched in the pages of history. So you can either
At the flow of, but Chad, I'm looking more at the flow of, in the Taoist tradition, that we all have our own pace and pattern. So it's not the mainstream flow.
Absolutely. And I agree
so you have
with that.
To, like, right, because kind of martial arts to know when something is coming, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. in martial arts, the idea is not to even have to throw the punch or the, you know, the karate.
Right.
Movement, you see it coming already. So I'm talking more like the personal, being in your own personal flow.
I agree with you.
Definitely not the masses.
And thank you for clarifying that, because definitely
your
own flow, but not with the flow of what everyone's doing around you. That gets scary.
Yeah.
So that's what the Jews
Yeah, that's what, well. Yeah. No. Yeah, that exactly. You don't want to do that. Yeah, your own personal
Yeah.
flow. And then that goes back to what little Lola was talking about. Then you have to have the confidence of what your personal timing is, or your rhythm, or your flow.
Exactly.
To
and
act on something forward.
And know that you're valuable. Know that what you bring to the table is of value. Most of the times it's been beaten out of us, metaphorically and sometimes literally. But it's so know that what you have to bring to the table is valuable. And then you'll feel much more comfortable doing an honest and even exchange with others symbiotically, because you realize value in what you are exchanging, what you're offering. And that is key. And people just, I like the quote, Spiritual Pilot, he's on Blog Talk here, great guy, and he sent me an email recently. In the bottom of his email it says, go within and you'll never go without. And I was like, you know what, that is, I like that. I like that. Go within, and you'll never go without. That says something to me on like 10 different levels. And
yeah. So this is what Sunny is saying here: find your own current. And I kind of feel that. But isn't that cool? I don't know how necessarily you're meaning it, Sunny, but I kind of see it and feel it vibratorily. If that's a word, vibrationally, and also the idea of the water or a flow that's guiding you, but also your, you know, what's the current, that the vibration that you resonate to, that
exactly,
you know, suits you.
Energy is like water, and it always finds its own level.
Mm-hmm.
So
it always
comes together in that in these ways, and I'm sure everyone around us, if you notice, you're seeing these coincidental or these synchronicity, these engagements, these meetings that are taking place. You're just meeting people left and right. They're all opportunities for connections. And if you mutually and if you engage each one of them in a mutually beneficial relationship, you will have a network that is unbelievable and that can produce just about anything in a short period of time by working together. But if you seek to compete with everyone you meet, it's going to be a nonstop battle to the day you die, and you're still not going to win.
Do you think we're moving as a whole, as a collective you know, more towards that?
Yes, especially with more home-based businesses and more people starting their own business. We're coming into a time where information will be exchanged as the greatest commodity. People will be paid for their insights. And I'm stealing this from James Redfield 30 years ago out of the Celestine Prophecy, but it's happening. We're in an information age. We're in an information age where people are paid for data in gigabytes per stream, and it's just insane. There's money floating everywhere all over the ether. It's all channeled, and it's all there. And most of the time, it's paid to someone for what they do with what they know. It's not that you get paid for what you know, because no one does, but you do get paid for what you do with what you know. And we're moving into a time when people who have insight to offer, that's going to be just a valuable commodity. Maybe not on the New York Stock Exchange, but between you and I, between people, you know, that's going to be valuable. And we're going to, I see us moving into that right now, even in this conversation.
Yeah, I wonder what it is. I mean, there seems to be a real, you know, I know I love it, but and always have, and obviously friends of mine, but it seems on a collective, there is this real push or pull or nudge to really connect and share, you know, to teach and learn and share.
What are the most popular sites on the internet right now? Community sites, Facebook, MySpace, user interactive communities. Those are what's popular. And why? Because of what you're saying, I think. Because people are seeking more ways to connect, to interact, and to share ideas. Because think how quickly. I mean, this all goes back to thousands of years when we were sitting around a campfire having this same conversation, but not with people from all over the world tuning in. We were just talking around a campfire in small circles. You know the 100th monkey effect. You know how that works?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how it went on for thousands of years. Now exponentially multiply it by the internet. Think of the 100th monkey effect of people around the world right now in real time listening to the sound of our voice who spur ideas and move things forward exponentially hundreds of years in human evolution just by the conversation we're having right now, whereas before it took 1,000 years to make that happen. Here we can do it in an hour and a half. And that's the quick thing. That's we're thinking faster, we're moving faster, we're manifesting faster. And once we engage once we engage it consciously, well, you know, then we're playing the game actively rather than sitting on the bench clapping, yay, good game, yay.
I think
life is
say
a participation
here.
Sport. Life is a participation sport. Get off the bench, you know?
Right. Get in the game. Get in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think, Chad, what you're saying here, though, bring it to consciousness. We have to be, it's been kind of hit or miss, you know, kind of slipshod in the manifestation. But as it, you know, people are getting their groove on, so to speak, you know, that it is happening more consciously, you know?
Yeah. And it's faster because we're conscious of it now, and we're like, hey, okay, wait a minute. And just like if you're an intuitive person and you interact with someone who's being dishonest, don't you feel that? Don't you see the traces of gray in their aura? I mean, you feel it. You know it. You taste it in the roof of your mouth. So whatever they say really just, you know, I mean, you can listen if you like, but it's, you know, secondary. It's secondary. And I think more people are becoming aware, then they are waking up to their own potential, that they are what Jesus and Buddha and Gandhi and everybody else has always said, and that's that ye are gods. And we are learning
now that's why, and believe me, I had on my website, I think it was around 2000 when we put up, I had that you're all already enlightened, and I was telling people, no. Now people are more calm about it and relaxed and saying, you know, that's true. But before, God, you think I was like, telling people to blow themselves up or something. When I would speak, not yet, right? And it's like, all it means, enlightened, is just in light of light. You know, you are, we are light beings. But it was very heretical. You know, people were like really freaking out about it. Not yet, not me, you know.
Well, you know, I'm hoping. I mean, that's my intention. And I know some, you know, both work toward that every day is in Inner Circle Publishing is we want to feel like we're bringing those people out there that are waking up and that are writing this stuff down, who realize they're in tune and they can hear everything that is there to hear, and they're writing it down. I think that is valuable. And rather than trying to convince the rest of the commercial publishing industry that this is what will sell, because that's all they care about, we started Inner Circle to bring this to people on our own. And I like to think that every day, everything we do is at least making it more readily available. Because I don't know about you, but if you've ever read a book from someone written whenever, and you read their concept and you go, wow, it's not just me that thinks this. It's not just me. I'm not making this up. This guy lived 100 or 1,000 years ago. He wrote the same thing. Okay, I want people that are seeing what they hear inside. I want them to start writing it aloud. I want them to start voicing it. And when other people hear that, they'll realize, oh, yeah, it's not just me.
Now, Chad, how do you take submissions? If people, some people listening may have a book or two in them, or how would they contact you?
Ideally, innercirclepublishing.com, through the contact page. Okay. We prefer email submissions. Save the paper. We're not interested in cutting down trees. We just want to see what you have to say. And if you are an author of metaphysical content or spirituality, that encompasses a large range, but we'd love to hear from you at Inner Circle Publishing. And you touched on it earlier, but Revolution Press is another imprint that we have, and it is open to all.
Revolution Press?
It's built on the exact same principles as Inner Circle Publishing. It's just open to all genres because about 2004, it was pointed out to me by one of our authors that basically we were still being as judgmental as any other publisher, because if you didn't write metaphysical content, we didn't publish your book. And he was right. Mm-hmm. And so that spurned us to think, okay, you're right. People should still have the same opportunity to get their work into print just because it's not metaphysical, you know, as we do. And so that's where Revolution Press came, where if you as the author feel that it's worthy to be in print, then that decision is on you and not in the hands of some gatekeeper in the name of a publisher. Mm-hmm. So that's where that came about. And it's open to all genres, but we are still specific at Inner Circle Publishing because we're looking for metaphysical content that people can read and will hopefully expand themselves, recognize themselves in it, and say, wow, yeah, it's not just me, you know? Because I don't think it's just any one of us. I think it's all of us together. And I think we're just now starting to realize that, whoa, okay, that's why I see things on top of things and image overlays in my mind at 2,500 images a minute. I mean, this is the reality that people are living in now, and it's a lot faster than it was 50 years ago.
Yeah, so the Revolution Press, that's for any genre.
Yeah.
And then the Inner Circle Publishing, it's metaphysical, spiritual. And you have editors that work with you also? Do you kind of walk the people through the whole process, or?
As needed. A lot of people that are writing spiritual content or even poetry, they don't need so much editors to rewrite. They just need it for basic spelling and grammar. And we do have people on staff that can work with you that way if needed. Some people don't need that. So it just depends.
I think it's good, to keep the flavor. I know when the first edition of my book, when I was working on that, the cadence of the meditations and the words, there's a whole technology to that, and the editor didn't know that and was changing things. And so I had to read it out loud, and I had to say, there's a reason I'm saying heart, lung. There's a reason I'm, there's a certain case. Yeah, it's encoded. It's a certain reason. And
if
you grammatically, right? And grammatically, if you change it, it's just dry and doesn't put you in that meditative state, you know?
She's editing numerically rather than spiritually. She's not looking at the spiritual text. She's looking at the grammar of it, and correcting it makes it incorrect, so to speak. That's why we do have people that are available for that, but it's usually just more looking for punctuation, spelling, things of that nature, because a lot of spiritual writing is intended the way it's written.
No, and I one specific example was heart lung. I mean, if you say focus on the heart lung area, that draws you in. But if you say focus on the heart and lung area, there you go. You're out. You know, you're not going to the next
stage. Exactly. And you as the creator of that content have the ultimate decision. So that's another thing most people don't get. When they sign over the rights to your work, you just give them the content. They do whatever they want with it. And if you've ever been on TV, you see how they cut stuff to however they want it to appear. No matter really what you say, you know, it only takes about 10 minutes. They can make the interview from there. But the thing is that you as the author, the creator of that content, should be entitled to have the final opinion. And that's one of the things that Inner Circle is built on, is that the creators of this material should have not only the rights to it and 100% of the net, but the final creative control as well, because it's their vision that's creating this. You know?
Now, something Melanie is saying, so should they know the subject as well or need to know? And maybe they do, maybe they don't in the editing, but at least be open, right, to the input or how the feel for the book or the tone would be.
I would suggest a spiritual editor. I mean, the women that we work with, Angela McKenzie, she's a great editor, works online, but she is a spiritual person anyway. So the concepts and things that she's reading are not new to her or not an unknown where she's going to be changing it to be grammatically correct. She can edit from a spiritual point of view. Again, meet people and come in contact with people that are of like minds that can benefit you towards your goal, and that will help you, you know.
Okay. So it does make a difference then on the person then?
I think so, because people is all there are. I mean, hell, the world's a great place, but you take away all the people, what do you got?
Right.
The internet, that's a great place. Right. You know, take away the people, what do you got?
Right, exactly.
Pretty boring.
That's right. Now, Chad, do you... The mastermind group, did you meet with the mastermind group to put... the publishing company together, or were you doing that, you know, on your own, I guess?
We're doing it continually. In fact, the author that comes in tomorrow that I haven't met today, that I don't even know, the author that comes in tomorrow and says, hey, have you ever thought about this? And we say, no, we haven't. Great idea. And it may change the entire direction of Inner Circle Publishing. And that mastermind principle, we go back to everybody putting their stuff on the table. There's going to be people coming that bring experiences and insights and understandings that I don't have, or any of the other 50-something authors that we're working with worldwide are bringing to the table. So we encourage and invite people with ideas. They not only want to have their books published, but want to actually formulate the direction of this company, because when we talk about cooperation, we're pretty serious, actually.
Yeah.
We really do it that way, and it works better. It works much better.
So you really are. So it really is kind of morphing to whatever's going on around you then. I mean, if you say...
It's morphing to whatever ideas are brought to the table. We're interested in the common theme of exposure. We as authors, you know, we're working with authors all around the world who all are pretty much talking to the same audience, spiritual, you know. They're talking to the same audience. Their goal is the same, to reach more of an audience for their particular book. So by working, by coming together and working together, we can achieve things that no single person can achieve alone, no matter who they are, just by the simple idea of cooperation rather than competition. In fact, like I said, if we're in the same publishing company and one book sells 1 million copies, all those copies carry with it direct promotions for your book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one small example of how cooperation can be used to achieve the goal of the whole. And the more people you have in the mastermind group, or then the more ideas that you may come up with to achieve the goal even faster, which mm-hmm. everybody likes. I'm not a patient person.
Right, right. But now, do you meet? Do you meet collectively, or you know, via the internet or something to focus on this, or
you know
is
what?
It?
What we should. The way it really works is I'm personally in contact with every author who's actively promoting on a daily basis. So more than likely, between either emails between the group or between just phone calls with me in between, that's pretty much the way it operates. But the idea is that every person's input is valuable no matter where they are. Mm-hmm. Whatever they bring to the table, we welcome, and we welcome ideas we haven't thought of yet, because essentially we are all working toward the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cooperation. That's what makes it successful. If we were competing, well, you know, one person's success is then another person's failure.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a wonderful family. Networking family. In a, huh?
It's a scary word to me. I know.
Family. Cold. No. Well, I mean, there's
I'm
a kind
of that
of
on
soul.
PR too.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. We won't mention names, but I know you know. The soul. Well, you know what I like, though? It sounds like, in a way, you're going off of also the law of resonance. Whomever is a resonance there.
Absolutely. And, you know, Michelle, we have people drawn to the site that when they email us with their submission, they say, as soon as I came to your site, I knew that I was supposed to be here because of that resonance. And when you're dealing with spiritual people who are going on their own intuition, no matter what you tell them, they mm-hmm. More validity in their own intuition than any sales pitch. So it's good to deal with those kind of people. In fact, that's all we want to deal with. Because
yeah.
you put all of them together, what could we create? What can we create with a lot of aware people coming together and say, okay, we get it. What we think mm-hmm. happened, that's the end of all the great wisdom in the world so far. What we think happens. Okay, we get it. So now, let's think things that benefit us all rather than the few. Yeah, let's think things that benefit the many as opposed to only the few, because that's what we're thinking for the last 100 years, and that's been great for 3%, but the other 97% have to go to work for a living, and there's another way. Whoops. We'll probably get cut for that, Michelle.
Yes, I know. Melanie's just writing, what happened to the hippie communes?
That's a good point.
I don't know.
What did happen?
No, they always
what did happen?
But those things, they still, you know, not that I've been in any, but I've seen them on documents. They still are telling people what to do, you know. So,
hey, let me
little,
ask
you know,
her a question. Hey, Melanie, what would hippie communes be if every member was a millionaire?
Yeah. That could be different.
That could be different because then you could collectively have resources to manifest your ideas instantly. I mean, that's all money does anyway. So if you were of that mindset and you had, let's say, 10 millionaires come together, and instead of buying planes and all this other useless stuff, you said, hey, wait a minute, we've got a lot of resources here. We could really, influence the world. We could really change things if we wanted to.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like, but this is checking in. Instead of checking out, we're staying very productive in the world.
Ooh,
and,
nice.
And co-creating. Yeah.
I like that.
And with that, Chad, we're winding out 56 seconds. Thanks so much for being on Awakenings, Aware on Awakenings.
We've
been talking with Chad
Lee,
Inner Circle Publishing and Aware Talk Radio. Thanks so much, Chad.
Always.
Thanks for
being anytime.
Here. And all in the chat room, thanks for connecting and sharing your insight and your wisdom in the chat room. And tomorrow I'm going to be on Aware Talk Radio, 10 a.m. Pacific time with Douglas Malloy alias Dougie Slap. And we're going to be doing some meditational processes and continuing from today. So this is the Awake Aware Sandwich. So until next time, be aware, stay aware, and keep awake. Peace and light.